Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. August 13th is the anniversary of the Reagan tax cuts. We're going to get into that a little bit in a few minutes. But it's also a time when some of the real weasel stories of the, and that's being very gentle, of the Bush administration and the way that they lied us into this war and then tried to cover their butts are coming out. We had Ron Suskind on the program last week, and he was talking about how the Bushies were phonying up this memo saying that there was a connection between Saddam Hussein and Al-Qaeda. And today, Larissa Alexandrovna is with us with RawStory.com, one of the best investigative reporters out there. Larissa, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Can't find WMD, plant it, says
right, exactly.
Your article. Tell us about this.
Well, I had first learned of these allegations in 2004 from an arms dealer, but at the time I couldn't corroborate it, and given the source, it was, a bit shocking to believe. But in 2006, I was able to indeed corroborate it, and basically what I learned is that we had a special military unit that was quasi-legal, extra-legal, however you want to define it. I call them the Ghost Team. It was a unit of 4 to 5 men who reported directly to Stephen Cambone's shop. That's Defense Intelligence, and in particular, the Office of Special Plans.
Doug Feist.
Right, the now notorious Office of Special Plans we all know about. And that was tasked with cooking intelligence, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So you have this, special forces team that nobody knows who they are, who they're reporting to. Our, normal special forces folks are running into them in Iraq, and they don't know who they are. But they basically were tasked with, among other things, trying to find Iraqi scientists who would help them solve a political problem. And that political problem was that there were no WMDs in Iraq.
Right.
And they wanted the help of these scientists to recreate, if you will, the evidence that was lacking.
Right. Scott Ritter is writing over at Truth Dig. He talks about his informant, a fellow by the name of Mohammed, who he has worked with for a number of years and absolutely trusts. The guy's a former WMD scientist, a nuclear scientist in Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
And he talks about how this guy, Mohammed, tells Scott Ritter about his being interrogated by a guy named Dave,
right,
from the United States Embassy, Kuwait, according to his T-shirt, Seal of the United States. And Mohammed says, there's no WMD in Iraq. Dave continued pacing back and forth in front of Mohammed. My president, Dave said, is in trouble. Can you help him? Mohammed was taken back by the question, excuse me, could you repeat yourself? Dave sat down next to the Iraqi. George Bush is in trouble. Our people did not find any WMD in Iraq. Can you help us?
Mm-hmm.
Mohammed looked back at Dave. How? Can we prepare something for that? We could bring in some nuclear material from the former Soviet Union and pretend they're Iraqi.
Right.
And then Mohammed explains that if you did that and UNSICOM or IAEA or whatever, comes in and checks it out,
right,
there's all these kind of DNA type, nuclear DNA kind of fingerprints that are all over nuclear material. It would immediately be sourced back to the former Soviet Union. Everybody would know that it had been planted by the Bush administration. It wouldn't work. And Dave walks off dejected. Is this a separate story from the one that you're telling? Is this corroboration of your story?
Well, that's a good question. If you want to read that sort of exchange that I was told about years ago, and see if they match, because in my opinion, they do match.
Yeah, they seem to be very, very similar, and so it seems like, which then raises the question, is all of this coming through Scott Ritter, which doesn't diminish in my mind its credibility at all?
Sure, sure.
Or are there multiple sources here?
Well, I know my sources, who my sources are, so I'm not sure who Ritter's sources are, and I doubt very much he's using real names, at least for his trusted sources, as opposed to who this Dave person was.
Right.
I don't know who his sources are, but I do know who my sources are, and the fact that this is so similar, and I might add that when I initially heard this, and mind you, this is from an arms dealer, not an expert. A dealer. This is not this is an underbelly type of person that I interviewed.
Right.
So, which is why initially I didn't think anything of the story. This person said that this was fairly well known in the green zone, that this was going on.
Right.
And that, there wasn't just one scientist. It was several scientists that were being approached. So it could be, you know, two different, you know, scenarios where they're approaching several scientists and
it was thick with it. In fact, Ritter says that his informant Mohammed told him that he shouldn't come over for that particular visit because there were actually assassination squads that were also operating at that time, looking for people who, like Scott Ritter, who might be trying to uncover the truth of what the Bushies were doing illegally under the table, and they'd take him out. They, you know, his life would be at risk.
Right, right. And I believe Ritter, but I hadn't heard that part of it. Mm-hmm. What I did hear and could never confirm, because it would be impossible, given the kind of violent sort of protection of, you know, these lies, is that, you know, this arms dealer at the time told me also that this 4 to 5 man team, they were actually hoping to set up a lab, because the scientists were telling them, you can't, as you noted, you can't produce this or rather plant this, because it would be identified, because the crystal, as you say, the DNA, the fingerprint, would identify it as not of Iraqi origin. So they had actually contemplated, and I don't know if they ever tried, but they had contemplated setting up a little lab where they could cook the yellow cake uranium and then tie it to Niger. That allegation I could never prove, but given the fact that my own sources later confirmed the interrogation of scientists and hoping to get them to play ball, that, you know, that they had confirmed that, and the fact that now Ritter comes out and his own sources are telling him this, you know, I think it's important to go back and examine some of the other allegations at this point.
Right. This seems to be the sort of thing that a congressional committee should be looking into as well.
Right.
I also remember, we're talking with Larissa Alexandrovna, one of the best investigative reporters in the world, reporting over at rawstory.com. Larissa, tell me if my memory is correct here. I seem to recall in the probably 6 months after the invasion that there was some big incident up on the northwestern frontier. I don't recall if it was the border with Saudi Arabia or the border with Syria. And, you know, a whole bunch of people died, and it kind of got covered up, and there was a lot of speculation. It was like a 3-day story in the press, and there was some speculation that this was actually an attempt by the Bush administration to bring WMD into the country to be discovered. Do you recall
that? I don't know if that's true. I don't know how many of your listeners know, because usually I'm on talking about the U.S. attorney scandal, but, you know, I have for years been an intelligence reporter, and only this past year really focused domestically. Mm-hmm. But at the time that all of this was going on, I was chasing this ghost team, you know, trying to establish who they were, what they were doing, who were they reporting to. And there were several incidents of that type of nature. There were even incidents where deliveries were intercepted that were alleged to have been via the Bush administration.
Yeah, and it was like one hand didn't know what the other hand was doing, so the U.S. military was killing the U.S. other parts of the U.S. military that were covertly trying to smuggle WMD into the country so that
That's the allegation.
Yeah, so that the legitimate military could find it.
Right, and as I said, our guys, some of whom I talked to, who are special forces, legitimate special forces, were there, and they would bump into this other sort of team and say, who are you? Why are you here? You know, they had no idea who these people were, other than they were dressed in, you know, they were Americans and dressed in military garb and were claiming to be with special forces.
Does this have anything to do, we just have a half a minute here, Larissa,
okay.
Does this have anything to do with the story of the two British guys who were found dressed in Iraqi garb and were apparently in a bombing car of some sort and got busted by the Iraqi police?
Well, I mean, I think it's similar, but I don't believe it's the same group of people, because these are ghost teamers. I call them the ghost team. They were Americans. There's no question. I confirm that with everybody.
Yeah.
But it seems to be a similar pattern of creating a problem.
Mm-hmm.
For which then there's, you know, the justified continued presence in the region is what it looks like to me.
Yeah, this British team seemed to have been involved in trying to create a provocation between Xi and Sunni.
Yeah, yeah.
Larissa Alexandrovna, she's reporting over at rawstory.com. You can read all about it over there. Larissa, thanks for dropping by today.
Thank you.
Great talking with you. 16 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartmann Show. Drop into our live chat room at tomhartmann.com. And you can also find a link to our video, our live free video stream over there, also at AirAmerica.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartmann Program.
Program brought to you in part by the Teamsters, fighting to pass the Employee Free Choice Act. Find out more at Teamster.org. And just a quick heads up, on August 26th at 6 p.m. in Denver, I'll be at Borders Books in Lone Tree, Colorado, the Park Meadows Mall. That's at 6 p.m. on the 26th of August. And on September 2nd, as I'm in Minneapolis for the Republican Convention, the Voice of Minnesota AM 950, KTNF, AM950KTNF.com, their website, invites you to a party for change. Join Bill Press, Stephanie Miller, Jim Ward, Ed Schultz, Chris Lavoie, me, John Elliott, and Bill Press and I will be doing book signings. And this is all going to be at Black Bear Crossing on the lake, and tickets are $10 at the door only. So that should be a good gig and should be pretty full up. And of course, this weekend I'll be up in Seattle. The tickets are already sold out. Our number, 866-303-2270. We'll be getting your calls in just a minute. But I want to take this back to, it's amazing how today's speculation becomes tomorrow's retrospective news about today's events. I mean, with the situation that we're seeing in the former Soviet Republic of Georgia, over a TPM Muckraker, Talking Points memo, Andrew Tilghman writing, John McCain's top foreign policy advisor, Randy Shuneman, has for years been an essential conduit for the relationship between the United States and Georgia, the former Soviet Republic. He was Georgia's top lobbyist in Washington until earlier this year. He's still listed as president of the lobbying firm, which received $900,000 from the Embassy of Georgia since 2004. As Steve Clemens, head of the foreign policy program at the New America Foundation in Washington, D.C., told TPM Muckraker, Randy Shuneman is at a vital nexus, and it made Tbilisi, the capital of Georgia, feel as if it was wedged into the back pocket of Dick Cheney. So here we have Soviet Georgia and the Ukraine both being embraced by the Bushies and the neocons as, hey, let's get these guys into NATO right away. Let's poke basically Russia in the eye. This, you know, from Russia's point of view, this is the same thing as from our point of view in 1962, the Soviet Union putting missiles 90 miles off our shore in Cuba. And Kennedy said, nope, ain't going to happen. And Russia said, but you're putting missiles in Turkey, right, on our, you know, on our southern border. Or the Soviet Union said that. And as you'll recall, part of the deal that ended the Soviet missile crisis was under the table, was Kennedy said, okay, within 6 months, we'll pull the missiles out of Turkey if you'll back off on the missiles in Cuba and we'll both go our merry way. And they did, and we did, and we did. But all this raises the question. Did Shakhavili in Tbilisi, the president of Georgia, the former Soviet Republic of Georgia, did the president of Georgia make this invasion of this breakaway republic that had already, you know, to his north, South Ossetia, did he make this invasion of this part of, arguably part of his country? I mean, the Russians had been issuing passports, a lot of ethnic Russians in that area. Did he make this invasion at the suggestion of the McCain campaign? I mean, is it possible that this thing, if Bush was blindsided by this, if the State Department was blindsided by this, could it be because, and this is pure speculation on my part, but, you know, like my speculation that, gee, you know, the Republicans always seem to be out ahead of the Democrats on these judicial confirmations and nominations. Could it be that they're wiretapping or have been listening in on the Democrats' conversations? And then we discover that, sure enough, the guy in Orrin Hatch's office has been hacking into Teddy Kennedy's computer for over a year. And not just Teddy Kennedy, most of the Democrats on the Judiciary Committee, and they knew in advance what the strategy was. Or our speculation a couple of years ago, hey, is it possible that the Bush team is trying to import WMD into Iraq, and now this story is coming out? Yeah, it looks like they were. Or are they trying to cook the books? Are the Bushies trying to, you know, forge documents to make it seem like there's a connection between al-Qaeda and Saddam Hussein? Yes, it turns out Ron Suskind actually has the proof that that's the case. So my question, is it conceivable, is it possible, is it even probable that this whole crisis was provoked by the McCain campaign, or at least encouraged? And now we find Bloomberg is reporting. Now that Russia, this Henry Meyer reporting for Bloomberg News, you can find this over at Bloomberg.com. Now that Russia has humiliated Georgia with a punishing military offensive, it may shift its attention to reining in pro-Western Ukraine. Another American ally in the former Soviet Union, Russian President Dmitry Medvedev and Prime Minister Vladimir Putin's first order of business likely will be to try to thwart Ukraine's bid to join the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, NATO. Is John McCain playing politics? I mean, we've got a couple thousand people dead now in Georgia. A couple of thousand people are dead. Is this the result of the McCain camp playing politics, or is it the result simply of the McCain camp being in so tight with the neocons and having as their top foreign policy advisor the top lobbyist for Ukraine that gave Shakhavili this, you know, the president of Ukraine gave him this false sense of omnipotence, of power, that he did this stupid invasion?
You're listening to Tom Hartmann. Call him now at 866-303-2270.
Program defending America from the weapons of mass deception. Downright strange stuff going on out there, I'm telling you. Sometimes you think it's crazy.
The story, as we say, from the wire services. China's impressive haul of gold medals at the Beijing Olympics was tarnished somewhat today when it was revealed that abnormally high levels of lead were found in the first place medallions. The medals, which were supposed to be made entirely of gold, were instead found to be composed of 99% lead alloy coated with a gold-colored lead-based paint.
The shocking revelations roiled the Olympic complex today and set officials looking for answers from the Chinese manufacturer of the medals, the Wuhan 100% Pure Gold Medal Corporation. A spokesman for Wuhan, China's largest exporter of gold medals, said, "We are trying to determine exactly how much lead got into those gold medals. Until we do, we urge all first-place athletes not to lick, taste, or suck on their medals." The news about the potentially toxic gold medal spread panic among Olympic champions, especially U.S. swimming phenomenon Michael Phelps. "I am very, very concerned about my extensive contact with gold medals," Mr. Phelps told reporters. "But what am I supposed to do? Stop being so awesome?" It's really from the Borowitz report. It's tongue-in-cheek. No, I'm not serious. It's our crazy alert for the day. Speaking of crazy, what's going on in the world? Is the McSame campaign, is Exxon John ginning up this, or in some way, even perhaps indirectly, responsible for ginning up this conflict? Here's Russian President Dmitry Medvedev talking through a translator about how he's open to a peace deal, but he says Georgia's being dishonest.
Made by the Georgian president that for 2 days ceasefire has been ensured. Those are lies.
Those are lies. He's calling the president of Georgia a liar, and here again he says that
crazy people are very particular, because when they smell blood, it is impossible to stop them. Therefore, you need to make a surgery to stop this problem.
So now we have Russia talking about the Ukraine as the aggressor and characterizing it. I mean, this is incredible. Richard in Portland, Oregon. Hey, Richard, what's up?
Hi, I just wanted to call your attention to a article by Robert Scheer on from Truthdig, I think. That points out that Randy Schoeneman, the guy on McCain's staff, who is also a lobbyist for Georgia, was also one of the directors of the PNAC, the Project for a New American Century. And in that capacity, he also was in charge of the president of the Committee for the Liberation of Iraq, which was created by PNAC, of which he had been a board member, and actively involved in ginning up the war in Iraq.
Yeah.
So it may add a certain amount of plausibility to what is at this point admittedly speculative,
It does, yeah. And in fact, here's Robert Scheer's column over it. It's on the cover of Truthdig. Is it possible that this time the October surprise was tried in August, and that the garbage issue of brave little Georgia struggling for its survival from the Russian bear was stoked to influence the U.S. presidential election? And this is exactly what I'm speculating about. Richard, thank you very much for pointing that out to me. The excellent article by Robert Scheer, as always. And it's really quite remarkable. Ken in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Hey, Ken, what's up?
Thanks for taking. You know, I'm so thing with the war.
Ken, you're popping in and out.
I said up.
I'm sorry. I'm gonna have to put you on hold because I don't know if it's your cell phone or what it is, but maybe our call screener can figure this out. Leon in Miami. Hey, Leon.
Leon, it's me.
Yeah.
It's great listening to your show. I used to think Lionel was the most knowledgeable person about the Constitution, but
Lionel's a very smart guy.
And then the other day you had him on your show, so that was outrageous.
He's a very smart guy.
Anyway, did you listen the other day when the idiot president, when he's in China, said something about that Russia was in the wrong for invading the sovereign nation? What the hell did he do to Iraq? And he's been occupying their land so far.
You know, Wong Kat over at Wong Kat's site today, and she's actually citing another site. It's 4wins10.4wins10.com. Has photos of George W. Bush drunk as a monkey at the Olympics. Half a dozen military having to lift him out of his seat in the Olympics. He's so plastered he can't walk.
I guess I can't even talk about his name. If you've seen the banners and signs I have on magnetics, I have on my sign, you know, on my car, you would know that I cannot like him. Anyway, the reason why I call it is the Hague. I clearly don't understand what their purpose is and how they can go after someone. Why can't all Americans write to them and say that they want him arrested for war crimes, the Bush crime family?
Well, the international, it's a good question, Leon. First of all, and thank you for the call. The International Court at The Hague is not, you know, responsive to you and me. They have prosecuted professional prosecutors who look, you know, out at the world. They're responsive to the United Nations. So, you know, they prosecutors who look out at the world and say, hey, here's, well, they just did it with Sudan. They just, you know, they've indicted the president of Sudan, Bashir. And also, and this is because they had earlier indicted two of his henchmen and he promoted them. In fact, he put one of them, the guy in Bashir's government who was apparently, according to the International Criminal Court at The Hague, was responsible for the murders, the genocide in Darfur, the murder of over 1 million people. When he got indicted by the Criminal Court at The Hague for doing this, what did Bashir do? Did he smuggle the guy out of the country? Did he hide him away? Did he put him in jail? Did he turn him over to The Hague for prosecution? No. He elevated him to cabinet level in his administration and put him in charge of the Darfurian refugees. So, I mean, that's a problem. So, but I think what we're going to see, and we'll see, but my guess is that what we're going to see sometime next year, or maybe even the year after that, is that the International Criminal Court is going to start taking a very, very close look at a number of these people associated with the Bush administration. The only thing that could blow that up is if John McCain gets elected president. Bob in Virginia. Hey, Bob.
Hello.
Hey, you're on the air.
Tom, did you notice there was a little story that kind of slipped through the radar when Karl Rove was subpoenaed before the Congress, that his lawyer said that he couldn't appear because he was on a long planned trip?
Right, out of the country.
Right. And then on July 12th, it emerged that, in fact, he was supposedly vacationing in the Crimea.
Oh, man.
And this is something that it kind of just slipped right through the radar. And it was when this whole thing started blowing up in Georgia, I was like, wait a minute. Why would Rove...
Karl Rove was just in that region.
Why would he be in the Crimea?
Right.
He could go on vacation anywhere, any beach resort in the world.
You know, some as the old cliche goes, sometimes if it walks like a duck and it quacks like a duck,
there
it's a duck.
There you go.
And, yeah, Bob, thanks a lot. Thanks. I'm sorry, Bob, I cut you off mid-sentence. I didn't intend to. This is very, very bizarre. Terry in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Hey, Terry. Terry, you're on the air.
Hey.
Hey, Tom. Yeah.
Excellent to talk to you. Thank you so much for your program. I listen to it as much as I can, and I really respect your viewpoint.
Thank you, Terry. Your comment or question or call?
Anyways,
what's up?
What I wanted to just address was and one of your previous callers touched on it briefly, with, you know, when President Bush spoke in the Rose Garden, how empty his words were when he said that, you know, Russia should not have invaded a sovereign country. And, you know, the U.S. has obviously taken the same stance. The whole world knows it, and I think he basically made the U.S. a laughingstock by taking that tack.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I'm thinking that the result of the failed policies in Iraq and with the Bush administration has really left Russia an open hand to do whatever they want in Eurasia.
Yeah. Well, it's a very, very tough one. I mean, this is just, thank you, Terry, a very messy situation. Shakavili talking about this whole general mess that has been created.
The territorial integrity of Georgia must be preserved.
Yeah, and this is Condi Rice talking about, well, you know, we've got to preserve the territorial integrity of Georgia.
Of course, is withdrawal of forces and cessation of hostilities. Okay, thanks to go. And I hope they will.
And that's Shakavili saying, you know, I hope the tanks will go. Hey, maybe you should talk to John McCain's advisors. Kim in San Francisco. Hey, Kim.
Hey, Tom. Sadly, the fact that the neocons are doing this stuff shouldn't surprise anybody at all. But what I am most worried about is that I have a real fear that the majority of Americans in the middle heartland will buy it.
Well, I think that it, to a large extent they are. You've got John McCain out there, you know, demagoguing this thing. I mean, his response to it is, "Today we are all Georgians." I mean, he's using, you know, Reaganisms. He's using
We're that stupid. Don't we deserve the president we get? I mean, for God's sake, Tom, we've done this now for 8 years.
Yeah, Kim, I would argue that we haven't. I would argue that we had a coup d'etat and we've had two stolen elections, which raises a whole other set of questions that kind of go along the same line of your, you know, are we dumb enough to let that happen? But we have to start and thank you for the call. We have to start pointing this out and we have to start pushing back. And I don't think that this is just idle speculation. I think this is a real problem.
Visit HartmanRadio.com for live streaming video of the Tom Hartman Program.
Surplus now it's gone. Oh, the debt grows every day. Yes, the balance of our loans is bigger than Star Jones. Tell the kids they'll have to pay. I don't know what I'm gonna do. I wish this debt would go away. To try to pay these bills, or sell Dick Cheney's pills, or put Congress on eBay. And we owe
so much. We owe so very much. Helping you win the water cooler wars. Tom Hartman here with you. 866-303-2270, our telephone number. Travis in Eureka, California, listening on KGOE. Hey, Travis, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I was thinking about how the Georgian troops had to be pulled off the Iran-Iraq border.
Yeah, that was their principal job, I believe, was preventing or assuaging the concerns of America that the Iranians might cross that border and come into Iraq, or that, you know, people might be infiltrating or whatever. Yeah.
Well, I was thinking how that could leave open the opportunity to provoke war with Iran, seeing as there's less security there on the border now. And I'm wondering if that could have played into any of Neocon's plans there.
That's an interesting speculation. I'm not sure exactly how it would play out. But and in fact, there are some reports that the U.S. government has just in the last day or two, or reports coming from the last day or two, that the U.S. government has refused to sell or provide Israel with some of the technology necessary to do an attack on Iraq, or on Iran, excuse me. And thus we're saying no, when we've been saying yes, yes, go ahead and do it, apparently, for some time. So doing it by proxy. I mean, I think that the Bushies are getting it, that they would be way in over their head. They would just be so way in over their head. It's unbelievable. Don in Delaware. Hey, Don.
Hey, Tom. You never talk about this. Did Tony Blair and the Brits have anything to do with all this stuff in Iraq, or did they just go completely along with whatever the CIA and Bush said?
Well, we don't know. I mean, what we do know from the Downing Street memo and the Downing Street minutes is that they went along with cooking the books on Iraq. They went along with cherry-picking intelligence. They went along with the war. The question is why. I don't honestly know.
Did they do it for British Petroleum?
Could be. Certainly oil is a big deal, and the oil off the North Shore and some of the other oil reserves around the UK are starting to decline, and everybody's looking at, you know, as Dick Cheney pointed out.
Iraq sits on top of 10% of the world's oil reserves. Very significant reserve, second only to Saudi Arabia.
So there might have been that, or it could have been that Tony Blair thought that, just like George Bush thought, this was what would get him political power. If these guys, you know, being a war hero, I mean, Tony Blair was looking back at Maggie Thatcher and the Falklands War. Hey, a brief, short war. She got to be a hero. Everybody loved her. You know, she got incredible political capital from it and was able to use that political power that she got from the Falklands War to further privatize British Rail, to further privatize the British health system, to break the union, to break the coal miners union, or continue that. I mean, that was one of the early conflicts. I mean, just some major stuff, you know, for her neoconservative and neoliberal agenda. And so Blair might have been thinking, hey, you know, I can be a war hero too. And, you know, look at what it did for Churchill. Look at what it did for Thatcher. Just like George W. was saying, you know, Ronnie Reagan got great, you know, from Grenada, and my daddy got it from going after Saddam Hussein in Kuwait. And so I'll do the same thing. I don't know, Don, but I think that that's a good and important question. And we need, you know, hopefully there will be some serious British investigative journalists looking into this thing, and these stories will be coming out as well. Dan in Boston, Massachusetts. Hey, Dan.
Hey, Tom. How are you doing this morning?
Good.
I'm a huge fan of yours, by the way.
Thank you.
But this is stick on the oil thing. I'm disappointed in Barack, and I'd really like to hear him come out and say, no more oil in 10 years. The car in your driveway is the last glass-operated automobile you're going to buy. JFK did it when he said, we're going to put a man on the moon and we're going to return him safely within a decade. We did it. We have that kind of ingenuity. What is keeping Barack Obama from making a pledge like that? I'll take your answer off the air, Tom.
Right. No, I don't disagree at all. And I think that, you know, this is a time when really bold moves are called for. And frankly, I think that there are some American companies. I mean, GM was running a full-page ad the other day, and, you know, disclosure, GM advertises on this show, but that's not why I'm saying this. They were running a full-page ad the other day saying that they're really committed to you know, getting off petroleum, to flex fuel cars, to more efficient cars and things like that. I think it's just the direction things are going. I mean, you know, it doesn't take a weatherman to know which way the wind is blowing, as they say. Steve in New York, you wanted to disagree with me about something.
Well, first of all, Tom, I love you to death. You're very, very good. But the ICC stuff. But it's a loving but. The ICC, International Criminal Court, you've kind of got it backwards.
Okay.
Ironically enough, if McCain were to be elected, it would probably be more likely that the ICC would look into the crimes of George Bush, and here's why. The ICC, per its statute, it's called the Rome Statute, is a court of supplemental jurisdiction, which means it only kicks in when a country in which the perpetrator is a citizen, number one, will not try somebody, or if they try somebody and it's a sham trial.
Right. No, I understand that. But isn't the ICC's power subject to UN oversight?
Not really, no.
I thought the ICC was created as a result of UN treaties.
It was created. It's a treaty in and of itself. You're thinking of the ad hoc tribunals, which have to be approved by the Security Council.
Right. And that was my concern, is anything that needs to be approved by the Security Council. McCain,
but there are no ad hoc tribunals anymore. The ICC replaced those.
Well, very interesting. There
are tribunals that still exist that were created before, like the ICTY, which is Yugoslavia,
right.
Which they still may be trying some of the people from when that was created, or the ICTR, which was for Rwanda. So I'm not being too critical. I'm just
I appreciate it, Steve. I'm very proud of the fact that I have the smartest listeners on earth. And I learn as much as I give on this show. Steve, thank you very much. Thank you. You too.
Great work.
Thank you. And thanks for the call. That's good to know. That's very good to know. 57 minutes past the hour. Coming up next, are the conservatives willing to kill a human race so fat cats can get fatter? Stick around.
This is Tom Hartman. Listening to Tom Hartman.
Welcome back. 6 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. The Bush administration has proposed sweeping changes to the Endangered Species Act, releasing a plan to give federal agencies the authority to decide without expert consultation whether their activities could harm endangered and threatened species. I wanted to get some broad range of thought on this. Terry Jeffrey is with us. He's the editor-in-chief of CNS News, cnsnews.com. Terry, welcome to the show.
Hey, Tom, how you doing?
I'm fine. Terry, are you guys willing to kill off the human race so the fat cats can get fatter?
No.
then why these? I mean, do you get it that life on this planet is like our bodies? It's there are all these, you know, our kidneys don't operate independent of our liver doesn't operate independent of our heart. If any one of them gets ripped out and thrown away or killed off, then the whole organism can die. And you know, life is this very, very complex thing, and we're messing with it in ways. I mean, we're in the midst of what Richard Leakey calls the sixth extinction. We've got species going extinct at a rate 100 or 1,000 times the normal background rate. This is dangerous stuff we're playing.
Well, look, I agree with you that we should and do have a duty to take care of plants and animals in the planet around us. But I believe that these plants and animals exist for our use and for our purposes. Ultimately, they serve the needs of man, including aesthetic needs. And I believe there are environmental extremists out there who have turned the whole thing upside down, and I think that man should serve plants and animals, not the other way around. And I could give you many examples of that, but I think it's really quite manifest in the environmentalist movement.
Well, that's very interesting. I would say that there's a third way, and that is that we are animals on this planet. We are part of, we are a product of, actually, this biosphere that, you know, they're the product of millions of years of evolution, that we evolved coexisting with all of these other plants and animals, that we're bound to them in 100 billion different ways, that actually there's more non-human DNA inside a human body than there is human DNA. I mean, we're interpenetrated by other forms of life, bacteria, viruses, all kinds mostly single-cell parasites. And although they're symbiotic, they, you know, we're finding that if people don't have the right bacteria in their gut doesn't work, you know, and things like this. And in fact, there's a lot of concern now that a lot of these diseases that, like lupus, you know, these autoimmune disorders are the consequence, and hay fever and things like that are the consequence of not having enough bugs in us.
Well,
that we're killing, you know, we're killing things off and it's killing us.
Well, there may be some truth in that. Let me give you an alternative philosophy, actually the one I was taught growing up. When I attended a Jesuit high school in San Francisco, one of the first things they made us do is memorize the first principle and foundation, the spiritual exercises of St. Ignatius. The first two sentences of that, Tom, said, "Man was created in order to praise, reverence, and serve God, and by this means to save his soul. And all other things were created in order to aid man in the attainment of this goal." So, and I think that's completely consistent with my Roman Catholic faith. So in other words, I would say, if someone like me is Catholic, adopt the Catholic view. Everything you use in this earth and everything you interact with, including plants and animals,
are sacred.
Well, the question is, are they being used in order to help man save his soul, or are they being used another way? And obviously, abuse of the environment is a sin. But properly.
Well, even beyond that, how could you know? I mean, you know, this is the kind of stuff that Thomas Merton, who I, you know, I don't know if you've ever read Merton. I'm
familiar with
love his writings.
Seven Story Mountain, right?
Among others, yeah. They, you know, the Little Birds of Zen and you know, so many. I mean, he's sort of the modern day Aquinas in some ways. How do you know? I mean, if you're looking at human activity that is merely to make a buck, and it is killing off other forms of life, if you want to take the religious perspective, I mean, even just acknowledging that as a possibility, which I think is, you know, a whole order of qualitative analysis above the one that really we should be looking at, which has to do with simply biological survival.
Right.
But if you want to look at it from a spiritual point of view, how do you know whether killing off that species is going to help you praise God?
Well, wait a minute. God gave us a rational mind, and we have prudential judgment that we should use. But making a buck off animals is not a bad thing. I mean, most of your listeners probably eat animals, and someone's making a buck off selling them those animals. Here's a classic example of the thing turned upside down. I wrote a column last year about a case that a U.S. judge in Oregon wrote about the steelhead, which is a species of salmon, ocean-going trout, basically. There are more steelhead on the west coast of the United States now than there historically were. But this judge says that's no good. Fishing them still is against the Endangered Species Act because a lot of these steelhead are being bred in hatcheries. They're basically a product of human-animal husbandry. We depleted the steelhead population. We saw there was a problem there. Then we figured out a way to making more steelhead than there ever have been. So they're now more abundant. But a judge says that's against the
Sort of. State. There's a couple of problems with that, Terry. I live out in the Pacific North. I live in Portland, Oregon, and, okay. and I can tell you. If you go back and you read the Lewis and Clark reports and all the reports of people who, you know, the kind of first contact reports, the salmon, among other fish, were so abundant in these rivers that it looked like you could walk across the river on top of fish. You don't see that anymore. Number one. And number two, the fish farms have become infected with fish lice. And we've got very, very sick fish, and it's one of the things that's killing off the wild salmon is the fish lice from the salmon farms. And everybody's freaked out about it. Nobody knows what to do about it. They're using all these heavy chemicals to try and kill off the fish lice. And so now there's questions about the health of the meat from the salmon that are coming from the fish farms. And people out here won't eat farmed salmon. They go into restaurants. They advertise, you know, line caught, wild caught. You pay a premium for it. And there's even concern that it could be crashing the ecosystem. So once again, here we are trying to play God and in the process destroying, you know, what you would characterize as God's creation.
Well, first of all, Tom, these steelhead aren't farm-raised steelhead. They're steelhead that run in those rivers in Oregon out into the Pacific Ocean and come back a few years later and breed. They're just hatched in hatcheries. But let me ask you this. I mean, you don't disagree with me that prudent use of all of those various species of salmon running up the rivers of Oregon is a proper and appropriate thing for the human race, that it is good and right for us to capture a certain amount of salmon and to use them to feed ourselves and our family.
Well, there's that huge qualifier, you know, the phrase certain amount. For example, we know that the forests here in the Pacific Northwest, you go out and you do, you know, DNA analysis of the soil or you look at the soil, we know that the forests require nutrients from the ocean in order to be healthy. And the way that those nutrients get from the ocean into the forests is the salmon go out into the ocean, they become steelhead, they come back up the rivers, bears catch them, eat them, go into the forests and poop, and that bear poop is how these micronutrients from the ocean that are vital to the health of the forest gets transmitted into the forest. So there is some level at which human intervention, we say, okay, we don't need the bears anymore, and we're going to eat all the salmon. There is a certain point at which we start crashing forests without even realizing it. And that's what I'm saying. If we're trying to play God with this stuff,
God wants us to play man. We're at the top.
How do you know?
How do we know? Because he tells us. He gave
so
us,
God is telling you how many salmon to kill?
He gave us dominion. No, he doesn't tell us how many salmon to kill. He did give us
We gave us dominion.
Over the bears and the salmon in the forest. It is then up to us to use that authority rationally.
Terry, how is that different from Osama bin Laden saying God authorized him to kill all those people in the suicide bombing in the market in Baghdad?
Because he is wrong and I am right, for one thing. Do you disagree?
See, that's the problem with using a religious argument.
Yes,
Tom, we're biological beings.
No,
let's talk about biology.
Tom, this is a basic question. If we agree that there is a God and he created us, okay, that's one thing. Can we get that far? We agree on that?
Well, look,
if you agree.
No,
that,
we can't. Okay, I don't think, because I am very wary of anyone who says that they know that a single monotheistic looks like a human being, talks like a human being, thinks like a human being, gets pissed off like a human being, creator decided that I'm supposed to go kill the salmon. I'm thinking, even though we both call ourselves Christian, that your God and my God are different things.
This gets right down to the core of it, because if we don't agree, there is a God, he created us, and God did in fact create the other things in this world for us to use responsibly and to be responsible stewards of, if we can't get that far, then actually you're kind of proving my point, because my point at the beginning of this conversation was there are people who believe that man is here to serve the animals and the plants,
Think it's either or, Terry. I think that there's a middle ground, which is we, in order to survive, we have to come to peace with our biosphere.
So there's a hierarchy here, and man is above plant and animal.
I have a tough one with it. You want to stick around? We'll take some calls and see what our listeners think about this. 16 minutes past the hour. Terry Jeffrey with us, the editor-in-chief of CNSNews.com. Stick around. 866-303-2270.
This is Tom Hartman.
Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Radio Program, your radio support group for We the People, 866-303-2270, our telephone number. We're talking with Terry Jeffries, the editor-in-chief of CNSnews.com. And I guess the question ultimately comes down, we started with the Bush administration basically saying that experts shouldn't be deciding whether or not endangered plants or animals are protected. That other agencies, like the Pentagon or whatever, should simply just do what they want, these sweeping changes to the EPA. And this has kind of devolved or moved, I'm not sure if it moved up or it moved down, into a discussion of whether Earth is here for man or vice versa, Terry. But let's take some calls and see what if you're up for it.
Sure.
Okay, Jeff in Tacoma, Washington, listening on Talk 1090. Or John, I'm sorry, John in Tacoma, Washington. You're on the air.
Yes, I'm a Franciscan, and Francis of Assisi referred to the sun as his brother and the moon as his sister. That's the level of intimacy he experienced with, frankly, all of creation. And to put a hierarchical value on all that is not only arrogant, it could possibly be blasphemous.
Terry?
Well, actually, the truth is, had St. Francis, in fact, elevated animals above man, he would not be a saint, and in fact would be heretical, because the Catholic Church does not believe that, never has believed that. And to reduce it to the reductio.
But Terry, why does it have to be above or below? Why can't we all be?
Because in fact, God gave us, according to the Bible, if you believe in the Bible, which Catholics do, and all Christians do, God gave us, the human race, dominion over this earth and the things in it.
Well, it also says in the Bible many places.
I would suggest that the word dominion is a rather poor translation. It has more to do with being a caretaker, a steward, rather than over and against.
Rather than an overlord. John, thank you.
Well,
Terry, I mean, that's my point, is that we're part of this web of life.
Sure.
It's not that we're here to figure it out, control it, and dominate it, or for that matter, that we're here necessarily to support it. It's that we're part of it. If we screw it up, we kill ourselves off.
Well, we're here to use it appropriately. Then the question is, what is appropriate? At the beginning of this conversation, I gave you one value system for determining ultimately what would be appropriate.
Right, but it was a religious one, and we're talking about government here too. I mean, there's that issue. But rather than you and I go, let's bring in Dennis from New Mexico. Hey, Dennis.
Hi. Yes, I'd like to bring out something regarding fundamentalist Christian. If they want to take the Bible literally, what about the Ten Commandments, which say, thou shalt not kill and thou shalt not bear false witness, which means lying? Are they going to take that literally also?
I hope so.
Yeah, well, so no war in Iraq and no George Bush, I guess. Thank you, Dennis. Or for that matter, the First Commandment, thou shalt have no graven images. Are you going to strip all the statues out of the churches?
Are you talking about Catholic churches? Those are not graven images.
Well,
they're not. They're
Martin
not,
Luther
they're
would
not
beg to differ.
Well, they're not.
I understand. That's a whole other debate.
A statue of the Virgin Mary in a Catholic church is no more a graven image than a photograph is. It is simply a reminder and a symbol. It is not something that is worth.
Yeah, and there are many Protestant fundamentalists who would suggest that even photographs are graven images, but as I said, this is way far afield of whether or not we should be protecting endangered species.
Now, thou shalt not make the steelhead a graven image.
Okay, Bernice in Dearborn, Michigan, you're on with Terry and Tom.
Yeah, hi Tom. I was raised as a Roman Catholic,
And it used to bother me when I read the passage, let him have dominion over, you know, all the animals and the fish. And I saw that certain people were using that as an excuse to dominate animals and not treat them with respect. And lately, the liberal Catholic theologians are saying, look at Genesis as a myth. Don't take it literally.
Okay, and thank you, Bernice. Terry, I'm guessing you would beg to differ, so we'll just leave it at that.
Sure.
And go to Todd in Los Angeles. Todd, hey, listening on K-Talk. Hey, Todd.
Hey, how you doing?
Great. Hey, we got about a minute here before the break.
I've read a book by Daniel Quinn called Ishmael that addresses this subject, and I strongly disagree. And I kind of agree with John that we've been put here with these great abilities that we have to adapt and seem to have greater abilities than any other creatures to be stewards of this earth. And it's important for us to understand that we're just part of a big thing, and we're not in charge here. Not at all.
Yeah, that's my position too, Todd. Thank you. And Dan Quinn is a great guy. He wrote a blurb for my book, Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight. I wrote a blurb for one of his most recent books, Ishmael, My Ishmael, The Story of Bee. A highly recommended reading, Terry. You ought to check him out.
Okay.
But it's all saying, you know, we're all in this together.
Well, let me just reassert my idea that there's clearly a hierarchy, and there's one thing that sets man apart from all these creatures, aside from the fact that God gave dominion over them, is that we have a rational mind in order to appropriately use that dominion. And there's absolutely no way you can tell me that a sheep or a cattle or a steelhead salmon is on the same level as the human race.
I think in terms of being part of the web of life on Earth, absolutely they're at the same level.
There's a hierarchy, Tom.
Okay.
And man's at the top.
Terry, we're not going to resolve this right now. CNSnews.com. Thanks, Terry Jeffrey.
This is Tom Hartman. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
Just 866-303-2270, our telephone number. The EPA, the Bush administration wants the EPA to basically be neutered. They want the EPA to be scaled back, their authority to be scaled back to the point where any other federal agency, any other group, any corporations, if they're going to do something that's going to kill off endangered species, fine. No problem. And there are several rationales being offered for this. One of those rationales is we are desperately in need of economic stimulation. We've got communities that are dying because they can't exploit natural resources. You know, setting aside the fact that if they cut down all the trees are gone, and it takes, you know, 60, 80 years for them to grow back. But nonetheless, hey, it's got to be about that. Or they're using these dominionist perspective, you know, the James Watt argument, which to his credit Terry didn't use, which is that, well, Jesus is coming back and he's going to make all things new, and so it doesn't matter, you know, sell off the West to the mining barons and let them rob and rape the land and kill off the species, because it just doesn't matter. 866-303-2270. Your thoughts, Adam in Los Angeles on K-Talk. Hey, Adam.
Hey, how are you?
Just
I want to thank the previous callers for their spiritual challenge to this dominionist. And I would like to add my own bit on the intellectual, since he's so determined upon subordination of things. The Bible makes very clear one cannot serve God and mammon. And these dominionists never qualify even a 1 on 100 scale in that little department.
Interesting. And mammon being essentially the economy. I mean, mammon is material goods. It's not the creation. It's wealth.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because we could approach, we have a problem with, the dominionists are so in love with order, and they're like the old communists. They want to compel the sacrifice of others.
Right, right. Very, very interesting point. Adam, thank you very much for that. Ted in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, WPTT. Hey, Ted.
Hi. I wanted to talk about the sky and the, you know, the hierarchy of man along with the rest of the animals.
Mm-hmm.
And he seems to believe that somehow we're superior, that we're the most evolved, that we're the pinnacle, you know, the crown of creation. And I was looking, you know, when they talk about mammals, animals in general, the bigger the brain, the smarter the animal, it seems.
Generally, although whales have brains that are slightly larger than ours, elephants are about the same size as us.
Actually, the way I understood it was there are certain whales that a man could stand inside its brain cavity.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, just because we're the most adept at killing things doesn't mean we're necessarily the peak of evolution.
Right, we're the peak predator. We're the top predator on this planet.
Right, I'm not so sure that, you know, whales aren't smarter than us and mm-hmm. might not even be considered higher in a hierarchy. I'm not saying they are, but, you know, who's to say they aren't? I think it was even I'm sure it was even the plot of a Star Trek movie, one of those Star Trek movies.
Well, you know, I think it might have been Orson Scott Card, who's a bit of a libertarian, but nonetheless, I think he wrote a book called, I think it was him who wrote the book Darwin's Radio. And the thesis of the book was based on a scientific fact, which is that the Neanderthal man, you know, the Neanderthals who were rendered extinct, it's looking increasingly like maybe as recently as 18,000 years ago in Europe, but generally consensus 30,000 years ago in Europe, that the Neanderthals' average brain size is 1,700 cc's, whereas Homo sapiens, our average brain size is 1,600 cc's. And so the hypothesis of this book was that they were smarter than us, that they had more highly developed brains than we did, and therefore they were less willing to engage in violence. And because we were willing to engage in senseless violence and speciesside, we exterminated them. And there is a fair body of evidence that we exterminated them. There's just, you know, nobody who can clearly say why. And in fact, they have found in just in the last 15 years or so, Neanderthal burial sites where, you know, they were making ochre and other colors from pigments. They had tools, they had beads. They appear to have had a fairly sophisticated culture in some places. And so, you know, it's even possible that not only are we not the most highly evolved mammal or, you know, thing on the planet, but that we killed off the one that was the most highly evolved.
That is pretty good. That's new information for me. I hadn't heard about that.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. I mean, it's fascinating stuff. Ted, thanks for the call. Nathan in Long Beach, California. Hey, Nathan.
Hey, Tom, how are you?
Good. I'm great, but I'll get better. How about you?
I'm fantastic and getting better. I just wanted to comment concerning man having dominion over the animals. If you read the book of Genesis, God gave Adam the commandment to dress and to keep the garden. And what that is really a metaphor and an allegory for being a steward of the earth.
Mm-hmm.
And it's man's duty and responsibility to be a caretaker of the earth and to help preserve the earth. If you look also in Genesis, man was the last of God's creation. He created all the animals first.
Yeah, well, and also, if you want to, I mean, if you really want to get literal about this stuff and try to figure out what's going on,
right.
from a biblical perspective, look at, first of all, think of there's two different ways historically that humans, or arguably three different ways that humans have interacted with their environment. There are hunter-gatherer peoples who actually live in the way of the rest of the world. That is, everything's waste is something else's food. You know, they migrate around areas, they use an area for a while, and then they'll move to another area, and eventually, by the time they get back to that original area, a generation later, it's completely regenerated. And so they're completely homeostatic. They're completely, you know, able to maintain themselves and and sustainable, I guess would be the
exactly.
word. And then there are pastoralists, people who herd things, but they by in many cases like the hunter gatherers, they live sustainably. And then there are the fixed place agriculturalists who basically suck up all the resources of the earth, use animals as for breeding purposes and rather than as wild animals, fail to have respect for them as living things and like that. And you know, Cain and Abel, when Cain, you know, Cain was the farmer, Abel was the hunter-gatherer slash pastoralist. Right. And when they brought their first fruits before God, Cain, the farmer, you know, God looked at that and said, that's unacceptable to me. And he dissed Cain. And he took and he looked at Abel's, and Abel was being the hunter-gatherer, and God said, this is good. And it so upset Cain that he killed Abel. And I believe that, and Dan Quinn talks about this in Ishmael, I believe that that was a warning back in the day. I mean, back 7,000 years ago when this thing was put together, I think that that was a warning about the dangers of the agricultural lifestyle. And I believe that the overt message is be careful about trying to think that you can control everything on earth and basically be the farmer. It's better to be the hunter-gatherer, as it were, the pastoralist, to be interacting with life at a level of congeniality, shall we say.
Exactly. And if I can make one more comment, you're spot on with that. And the book of Deuteronomy speaks about giving respite or rest to the land. So that's where the foundation of crop rotation comes from.
Oh, absolutely. And Jubilee, every 7 years, you had to leave the crops fallow. Yeah. Excellent point, Nathan. It's amazing what you can find if you did. Marcia in Atlanta, Georgia. Hey, Marcia.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
You've
got a lot of folks today. I want to speak to this idea of the Bible and how you interpret the Bible. First of all, as soon as you translate it from the original, in the case of the Old Testament Hebrew, biblical Hebrew, and in the case of the New Testament Aramaic, as soon as you translate it, you've interpreted it.
Right.
So that unless you study it with a scholar who can tell you how the words, the roots of the words, and where they come from, and what the larger meaning is, to base a hard, fast rule on what you read in the King James or the Jewish Publication Society or whatever it is a mistake from the get-go. The other thing is that you have to take things in their historical moment, and you also have to take in the agenda of whoever it was some 2,000 years later who decided whether it should be written and how it should be written.
So and this is true, by the way, Marcia, right across the board. I mean, we can apply this to Buddhism, to Hinduism, to Islam.
And the fact that it's allegory or myth doesn't mean it doesn't have a point or a meaning or a usefulness.
Right, yeah.
So, maybe I'm too intellectual and maybe I analyze it too much, but when I study, which I do weekly, it opens up whole new realms of understanding.
Yeah, it does and has for me as well. But I'm not going to use it as a justification for making money and destroying species.
No,
I think you wouldn't either.
Neither am I. While I was waiting, I went downstairs and looked that line up about dominion.
Yeah.
In a couple of different translations.
Mm-hmm.
And the second one that I found is hold sway over. I didn't like that any better.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. I'm wondering. You know what? I don't know enough Hebrew to figure it out.
Yeah, that's a question. I'm going to have to get a hold of my friend Hilly Zeitlin. He's a real scholar of these things and ask him. You know what the original Hebrew says. Marcia, thank you very much for the call. We'll pick up your calls and finish this. Actually, I think we've got the Talk Radio News Service coming up next, don't we? Yeah. So we'll be hearing from Ellen Ratner as well. 45 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, fighting for the common man and woman and the common good. Right here on Air America Radio.
The Tom Hartman Program. Visit us on the web at hartmanradio.com.
Yeah. Here's a little world you can all join in with. It's very simple and I hope it's new. Make your own life up if you want to. Any old life that you think we all do. Nothing new, there's someone much worse off than you are. Help me set them free. Just be what you want to be. Be what you want to be.
9.5 minutes before the hour. We'll pick up the news from the Talk Radio News Service in the next hour. 866-303-2270, our telephone number. Miriam in Miami listening on WINS. Hey, Miriam.
Oh, I'm sorry. I just wanted to make two simple points on that superiority of man.
Mm-hmm.
Number one, a dog has superior hearing and smelling than man does. And number two, if man destroys all the trees, how is he going to breathe without photosynthesis? So he does need his environment.
Right. This is my point. In nature, in all natural ecosystems, everything's waste is something else's food.
Exactly. Everything is related to the other. One cannot survive with the other.
And it's a giant circle. It's all a giant circle. And we have created an economy that is a line.
Exactly.
It's, you know, it's about growth forever, getting larger and larger. And our human population is growing larger and larger and larger. And in biological systems, when you have something that is linear within a circular system, you know, like if cells in your kidneys decided that they were just going to grow without limit inside the circular system of your body, the enclosed system of your body, that's called cancer. We're behaving in a way that is cancerous to this earth, in my humble opinion.
Absolutely. That was my point. And that same thinking, you cannot breathe without trees.
There you go. Well said. Miriam, thank you very much. Ed in Hillsboro. Hey, Ed.
Hey, Tom. Good morning to you. You know, I think that you can deconstruct this guy's argument just on prima facie level, because he pinned his claim to hierarchical dominance on the human capacity for reason. You know, well, it just so happens that our civilization, we have people who dedicate their lives to rationally studying nature. These people are called scientists. And so in matters related to the rational use of nature, who are you going to take advice from? A guy with a magic book or a rational scientist?
Yeah, that's it's perfect. That's taking the argument. It's like the shooting the arrow and it goes all the way around the world and comes back and hits you in the butt, you know?
That's exactly right.
Because it's amazing. Very well done, Ed. Thank you very much for that.
Sure.
Patrick in Portland. Hey, Patrick, what's up?
Hey, Pat. Hey, Tom. How you doing?
Yeah, you're Pat. I'm Tom. What's up?
Thanks a lot for clarifying that. I am a recovering fundamental Christian. I went to a Bible college in Southern California and did the whole mega church teaching Bible studies, and I get so angry when I hear fundamental Christians trying to use the Bible, which I believe now is a myth, to justify their actions. Obviously, this man has a need to dominate. He has a psychological issue with that, and he's using the Bible to mask his need to dominate.
Well, let's not personalize it. I don't think this is about Terry, because Terry reflects a position that's held by an entire culture. But, you know, there's a billion...
Well, I'm talking about the entire Christian culture. As well.
Right, and there's more than a billion Christians out there. In fact, there's more than a billion Catholics out there.
What if it was a woman instead of a man? I mean,
the Bible also says the man has dominion over women, or at least Paul says that. And,
then she'd be heretical if she was talking about this. But yeah. I just get really angry at people who use the Bible to justify their actions.
Yeah, I think anger. I don't get angry, but I'm saddened by it. I really think that if we don't get it, I thought Terry was on the verge of getting it when he started out by making the point, that everything is sacred, just as sacred as we are. Everything on this earth is filled with, as Daniel Quinn calls it, the fire of life. Patrick, I got to move along, but thank you for your comments. Patty in Missoula, Montana. Hey, Patty.
Hi, Tom. I just wanted to say that in Revelation, it clearly says, I am coming back to destroy the destroyers of the earth.
Yeah, I shall destroy those who have destroyed the earth.
I can't find it.
Yeah, it's the kingdom.
But, and another thing that I don't think anyone's ever thought of is displacing weight. When you take oil out of the earth, you're displacing weight. You're taking a barrel of oil and turning it into a teaspoon. Or a tablespoon or a cup or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the blood of the earth. And we really don't know the long term of this little experiment that we're doing.
Yeah.
So that's the only thing I have to say.
Thank you, Patty. I would submit to you that we do know the long term of it, and that the long term of it is that we're destroying the planet. I mean, it's just, you know, to go back to the revelation, you know, I will destroy them who destroy the earth. Charlie in Los Altos. Hey, Charlie.
Hello, Tom. This is Charlie in Los Altos.
Uh-huh.
I have a real problem with the Bible and all religions, for that matter, reflecting several of your recent callers. I'm a scientist and an engineer here in Silicon Valley, and I believe that religion can be boiled down into four tenets. The first thing is believe what I tell you to believe. Second one thing is live your life the way I tell you to live your life. The third thing is give me some money. And the fourth thing is when you die, you go to heaven. And I believe that all this nonsense should be replaced with science.
Well, you know, there's a lot of people who share your opinion, and I can't knock down any of those points other than the final conclusion, Charlie. I think that there's some value in religion, but I get it that every religion in the world, most of the major religions, you could dial back a little bit on Buddhism, but most of the major religions of the world pursue that. And what makes me crazy is when those notions of religion are used to promote public policy, like let's do away with the EPA. Charlie, thanks a lot for the call and for your comments. Mary in Seattle. Hey, Mary.
Hey. I'm totally shocked and surprised by how people can take the holy book and turn it around to mean what they want it to mean.
Mm-hmm.
I think that we were put here as stewards of this earth to care for the earth and to care for the animals. And it just, you can take that one step further. You were talking about the neocons. Mm-hmm. Obviously, life doesn't mean anything to them.
Yeah.
And I totally disagree. And your God, Tom, is my God.
Okay. Well, or at least it's not the angry I'm going to get you of some other folks, shall we say. Mary, thank you very much for the call. Man, religion is such a tough area to, you know, the old saying, don't ever argue politics and religion. Here we are doing both. It is such tough waters to wade into. I think that there is such incredible value in religion. I think if we didn't have them, we'd create them. We need them, and yet they can be so destructive. Everything You Know Is Wrong, coming up next.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Is Tom Hartman.
You know, sometimes there are things that you don't know that you think you know, and sometimes there are things that you know that you actually didn't know, and sometimes there's things that you don't know that you don't know, and there's things that you don't know that you do know that you don't know, and there's things that you ought to know that you do know that you don't know, and sometimes, as the Fireside Theater so aptly puts it,
you know that you're wrong, but you fear you're right. You suspect you're out of sync.
You think that you're out of your mind.
Everything you know is wrong.
Is it possible that we can bring about democratic world government through a global referendum? Jim Stark is with us. He, our Everything You Know Is Wrong guest, his book, Rescue Plan for Planet Earth. That's also the website, rescueplanforplanetearth.com. And he is the president of Vote World Government, an NGO dedicated to launching a global referendum on democratic world government. And that website is voteworldgovernment.org. Jim, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Tom.
You have some brilliant quotes opening your book. Al Gore, The World Faces a True Planetary Emergency. Harold Bymeade, the concept of world government should be looked at in a new millennium as part of a grown-up and sensible discussion. Utah Phillips, the earth is not dying, it's being killed, and the people who are killing it have names and addresses. Benjamin Ferres, if leaders won't lead, let the people lead, and the leaders will surely follow. And, you know, and so on. Dostoevsky, there's nothing easier than lopping off heads and nothing harder than developing ideas. I have a problem, though, with what you're suggesting. Let me let you lay it out for our listeners first, though, who haven't had the benefit of reading the book.
Well, the idea of a world government is just as good an idea as a national or a state or a municipal government. We have problems at that level that are not being dealt with by nation states. The problem has been in the past that there was no way to get it done. Or as the farmers around here say, get her done.
Mm.
You know, and now we have the internet, which means we can start it off on the internet, which is what we've done. We have an active ballot at the Vote World Government site. But eventually, of course, we're going to try and get a resolution through the United Nations so that every country will hold a national referendum in tandem with its elections so that they can use lists, you know, voters lists, and make sure there's no voter fraud and that sort of thing. Basically, the human race has resisted world government because they are afraid of having tyranny at that level. And it's a legitimate fear. There's a lot of conspiracy theories about the Bilderbergs and the this and the that, the Rockefellers. The
Well, let me lay one out that's not a conspiracy theory. 22 years ago, I lived in Germany. And at that time, there were a fair number of elderly Nazis that I got to know. I mean, I lived in a little town way out in the middle of nowhere, and nobody around us spoke English. And in fact, a friend of mine, Scott Berg, and I were writing a book on the history of the religion of Nazism, and we actually, met groups, organized groups of elderly Nazis who believed that, and, you know, they're probably, most of them are dead now. They were in their 70s and 80s at the time, but who believed that Hitler was right. You know, his biggest mistake was invading Russia a year too early. And the belief that they had bought into was that Hitler was going to bring about a one world government and 1,000 years of peace. I mean, and that, you know, the problem whenever anybody says let's have one government in charge of the entire world, I'm like, wait a minute, who's in charge of that government?
Well, two things. One, there's a concept called subsidiarity, which means that the things that are in the natural and normal jurisdiction of a municipality or a state or a national government will remain so. There are only certain sort of transnational issues that would be dealt with by this world government. But in writing this
would
book,
that be like War and Peace?
Beg pardon?
Like War and Peace.
Yeah, very much so.
Well, isn't that what the UN was chartered to do?
The UN was chartered to do that and has proven itself incompetent or incapable of doing that.
Well, let's reform the United Nations.
I beg pardon?
Then let's reform the United Nations.
Impossible. It's been studied. It's been studied to death. It's just not going to happen. What we need to do, and this is explained in the book, what we need to do is to set up some kind of democratic world government, whether it's a reformed United Nations or not, that is incapable of corruption. Because let's concede that there are various conspiracies out there. You know, I don't know what the neo-Nazis are doing. I don't know what any fanatical group is doing. But let's concede that those conspiracies exist. We can't have a world government that's run by them. If you're going to have a world government, you've got to have it in a digital fishbowl. You've got to use technology so that everything that the elected representatives and the top officials say and do on their computers is recorded and is archived and is made available to the public because they're...
But we can't even do that right now at a local and national level.
No, you don't have tape recorders on every elected official in the Congress of the United States of America.
That's my point. If we can't do that at a local or national level, what makes you think we can do it at a world level?
You can do it at a national and a local level. You just have.
But we haven't.
We haven't done it yet. We haven't tried it yet because we've never run into a situation where it's absolutely mandatory. Now, to have a government at the global level, you've got to be 100% sure that it will never be corrupt. And the only way to do that is to make every word open, transparent to the public.
You know who is also suggesting something very, very similar to what you're suggesting, Jim Stark. We're talking to Jim Stark, author of Rescue Plan for Planet Earth, rescueplanforplanetearth.com and democraticworldgovernment.org. The other group that is saying we need to have basically a single governmental agency. They don't call it a governmental agency, but basically a single agency that is incorruptible, that will bring about as a consequence of its existence world peace and world prosperity, is the World Trade Organization. And their assertion is that there's this mythical thing, this godlike thing, this religious-like thing called the free market, and that they are the arbiters of the free market, and they're the definers of the parameters of it, and that this free market is going to bring about global capitalism, which is going to bring about global democracy, and everything's going to be wonderful. And the fact of the matter is that every country that the WTO touches in any significant way starts to wilt.
Well, the World Trade Organization and the International Monetary Fund and the United Nations itself, particularly the Security Council, are good examples of world governance organizations that already exist that are not democratic. They don't pretend to be democratic. They have zero potential to ever evolve into a democratic institution. We have to start from scratch, and that's why to have this happen, you've got to consult the people. And we should be talking about whether such a referendum would pass. I mean, that's not even certain.
How are you even going to get, I mean, you know, it's, I think a cynic would look at your website at voteworldgovernment.org and just say, hey, you're just trying to gather demographic information to sell mailing lists or something. I mean, it's, a, I mean, what it says, do you support the creation of a direct elected representative and democratic world government? Yes or no. By the way, give us all your information.
First of all, they don't give us all their information. They don't have to put in their email address, for instance. And only their first name, their country, and how they voted yes or no is displayed on our website.
And date of birth. And
well, yeah, but, you know, it's not displayed on our website.
Yeah, but you've, I mean, I'm giving it to you. Information has value these days.
Well, not to me. I'm a writer. You know, I have no interest whatsoever in doing this. We will use whatever technological means we can deploy to assure people that we have no ulterior motive for.
So you say on your website you want to get 2 billion yes votes. You know, that would be, you know, 2 billion out of 7 billion. I can't do math fast enough to get the exact percentage of that would be. But you need to get 2 billion yes votes. How are you going to do that when you've got a corporate media that doesn't even discuss issues of war and peace in any kind of meaningful way other than jingoistically and nationalistically?
Well, we have the website. That's our start point. We have. I went to my town council last night and said, how would you guys like to make everybody in this area know that the computer at the library is available to them if they don't have the Internet to come in and vote on this issue? And they passed a resolution to that effect. I'm going to be meeting with a couple of American mayors in September, and I'll ask them the same question. I may send a letter out to mayors across Canada, across the United States. There's 1,001 ways of getting this thing done. It's not going to be easy, and the chances are we're going to fail. We don't know. What we do know is that legitimate scholars like Oliver Tickell, Campbell Craig, Alexander Wendt has stated that global world government is simply inevitable. I mean, we are looking at extinction if we go 4 degrees hotter than.
I respectfully disagree. I think that if we maintain local governments and we maintain national governments and local and national identities, that we act as a check and balance against others of us who may be getting out of balance or too militaristic, too bizarre, too destructive, that sort of thing.
Well,
and if it's all one world, then boy do we have a problem if it goes the wrong way. There's nothing to balance it. There's no counterbalancing power.
We are looking at 100 months, apparently, according to the New Economics Foundation, Andrew Sims, before we have runaway climate change, which means it's irreversible, which means basically, as Dr. Lovelock said, we're going to go down from 6.3 billion to about 500 million people this century. This is a planetary emergency, as Al Gore said.
I absolutely agree with you on that point. And I guess it's the question is, how do we solve it? You can check it out over at voteworldgovernment.org or rescueplanforplanetearth.com. Jim Stark, thanks for being with us, Jim.
My pleasure, Al.
16 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Place where progressives come to party. The Tom Hartman Program, 21 minutes past the hour. Larry Scott's on the line with us, the chief cook and bottle washer over at VAWatchdog.org, the American Veterans Online News Magazine. Hey, Larry.
Hi, Tom, and I'm ready to party.
Okay, great. Yeah, you've added presidential candidates, a presidential candidates page to your site over at VAWatchdog.org. Tell us about us.
This is a one-stop shop page, Tom, for veterans who want to know about the voting records and the plans being espoused by both Senator McCain and Senator Obama. What we've done is we've set up links to all of their voting records. You'll be able to go back and look and see how they voted on various pieces of legislation, on how the various veterans groups, such as the VFW or the Disabled American Veterans, have ranked both of the candidates. And you'll also be able to get to their sites and be able to look at their veterans policies as they are outlined. And it's just really simple. It's all right there on one page, and you don't have to go out searching. We've done all the searching for you.
And this is not Larry Scott, the notorious liberal's personal political opinions. This is, hey, here's the straight scoop.
There's no opinion in here. When it comes to the VAWatchdog.org site, it is completely apolitical.
What right, you are not the notorious liberal. You are.
Okay. But what we try to do is say, here are the facts. Here's what the candidates have done by their vote. Here's what the candidates have said out of their own mouth, and then you make up your mind. And I think that's the only fair way and safe way to do it, and it's the only real way for people to be able to say, well, here's the straight facts, because they're coming right from the candidates, and I'm not being influenced by someone's opinion.
I think this is great. On your site at VAWatchdog.org, Larry Scott, you have a story about how John McCain has reassessed his position on giving every veteran a VA card?
Well, this is an interesting story. Since February, John McCain has been saying, I am going to give every veteran a plastic card that they can take to any private health care provider and get the services they need.
Right.
All right. This is instead.
Sounds great.
Well, this is instead of properly funding the VA. But the problem with this issue is it has been opposed by almost every major veterans group as an attempt to privatize the VA.
This is like the school voucher version of the VA.
That's it. And so when John McCain spoke to the Disabled American Veterans Convention in Las Vegas this last weekend, this had been, I think politely, is reassessed. And what McCain has now done is said that he would still like a VA card, but it would only go to certain veterans, those with service-connected disabilities or those who might be indigent, and it could only be used in certain circumstances, which would mean if the VA could not provide care within a certain length of time.
Which means we're turning the Veterans Administration, we're by means testing things, we're turning it into a welfare program so it'll be easier to kill off.
And that's exactly what happened
here. Or privatize.
Now, here's what's really interesting is McCain got what almost all reporters at the convention called a lukewarm reception. And part of that was because he spent a lot of time on this VA card concept, and the Disabled American Veterans are firmly opposed to this. And as soon as McCain got off the podium, the DAV officials were saying things like, veterans are better served at VA. That comes from the legislative director of the Disabled American Veterans. They do not like this concept. And what's really interesting is that Tammy Duckworth, you know, the chopper pilot who lost both of her legs in Iraq and is now head of the Illinois Department of Veterans Affairs, Tammy Duckworth was there, and she just came right out and said, this is going to privatize the VA. No way.
Right.
So there's where we stand on the VA card. McCain continues to push it. Veterans groups say, not a good idea. Remember, Tom, for every veteran that uses that card, that's one less veteran using the VA, which means less money going to the VA. It is basically a way, as you said, to privatize and will eventually dismantle that health care system for veterans.
It's the school voucher. It's the exact same thing, school vouchers to public schools. This is the Republican strategy. Now, speaking of VA hospitals, the Veterans Administration has said that if you're a veteran, if you're injured, if you're in the hospital, that and somebody wants to come in and sign you up to vote, they can't do that.
No,
do I have this right?
No, that's not what they're saying.
Okay, then
the VA policy is the VA policy is groups of people, an organization, even a nonpartisan organization, cannot come in and hold voter registration drives.
So the League of Women Voters is not welcome in a VA hospital.
Exactly right, as is neither the VFW or the American Legion or the Disabled American Veterans, all of whom hold voter registration drives. The reason is, they say, to be able to monitor the activities, and the problem, this started down in California in 2004, there was partisan activity at a voter registration drive. And that's what caused this whole problem and how the VA ended up, you know, saying, no, you can't do it.
Yeah.
Now, a lot of people have complained about this, but the 9th U.S. Court of Appeals, Circuit Court of Appeals in San Francisco on Friday upheld the VA's decision. It's gone to court. Court of Appeals says, no, this does make sense because the VA doesn't have the resources to monitor these people effectively and make sure there's no partisan activity. But what your listeners need to understand is there is nothing preventing an individual from working with a veteran who, let's say, might be hospitalized or could be in a VA nursing home or could be in a residential treatment program. There is nothing to prevent individuals from working with them to register to vote. And also, many of the non-medical workers, such as social workers and caseworkers, do help them to register to vote.
Okay, okay. So it comes back down to us as individuals. We just can't leave it up to groups.
That's right.
And to help veterans get out there and vote. That's, and there's so much more. There's a great story about Karl Rove, knowing about the anthrax vaccine. You can check it all out at vawatchdog.org. Larry Scott, thanks so much for being with us, Larry.
Thank you, Tom.
27 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. Call us at 866-303-2270.
Helping you in the water cooler wars, it's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. That's me, 34 minutes past the hour. Our program brought to you in part by the Teamsters, fighting to pass the Employee Free Choice Act. Find out more at teamster.org, 866-303-2270, our telephone number. Max in St. Louis. Hey, Max, what's on your mind today?
Yes, good afternoon. I want to talk about Condoleezza Rice.
Okay.
How often have us liberals been beaten up? We have no one of her stature and our number, you know, and she does have quite a stature. Where has she been?
Well, that's kind of the Dick Morris line, but I haven't heard it anywhere else.
She's, well, no, that's, like I say, it's the stuff that comes from the conservatives and the Dick Morrises and all that, that whole crowd. But here is someone who speaks Russian fluently. When the Soviet Union fell, it was a surprise to her. But the point of it is she sends an envoy, an underling, an errand boy for a grocery clerk. And I've only heard, except for Mr. Holbrook, I have not heard any criticism of this. Mr. Bush, once again, bellicose, tough guy, big man stuff. But where is the person who can speak Russian?
Yeah, and Condi Rice, I think, yeah, not only has she massively dropped the ball on this, or maybe set the ball up for John McCain in some misguided belief that this kind of conflict would help him, Max, but she's also dropped the ball. She also dropped the ball on 9/11. You know, she was the security advisor to the President of the United States when the people working for her, like Richard Clark, were running around, in his words, with their hair on fire. And the CIA was issuing delivering memos to her and George Bush saying Bin Laden determined to strike inside the United States. And she's, let's go shopping for shoes. Meanwhile, Bush is warning Russia, and Russia is talking back. The Prime Minister of Russia, Foreign Minister of Russia, apparently telling us that we have to choose between Russia and Georgia. I'm telling you, there's more to this than meets the eye. And a lot of it, in my opinion, has to do with John McCain's number one foreign policy guy being the number one lobbyist for the country of Georgia and pulling down hundreds of thousands of dollars from that country and making them feel like they're in tight with the power crowd, the Republican power crowd, the Cheney bunch, and all the neocons and John McCain, and thus overestimating the power that they have. If there wasn't a wink and a nod, I mean, this might be an April Gillespie moment too. Remember the woman who the U.S. envoy to Iraq, who, when Saddam Hussein said, you know, if I invade Kuwait, are you guys going to stop me? Is there going to be any problem? And she said, I don't, that would be considered an internal affair, or words to that effect. So I we've got a problem. Tim in Detroit, Michigan. Hey, Tim, what's on your mind today?
Yeah, Tim, well, it's interesting. I agree with the whole April Gillespie thing regarding George. I thought of that myself. It's kind of interesting you brought it up. I'd like to go back to the first guy, you know, on the air. He was talking about world government and so on.
Yeah.
Well, I was sort of sympathetic to this as a youth, but I've sort of thought about it, and my take on it these days is I think we'll have something called a planetary government system when we are on other planets. I think that we're far too factional as people. We'll fight about everything, including facts. And I think, assuming we get technologically advanced, you know, we go on other planets, then I think we'll have some sort of a planetary system. Obviously, we have a lot of problems on Earth. We have to solve global warming on Earth. And if we go to other planets, we have to worry about, you know, so-called terraforming. There are gravity problems. But I think then we'll have some sort of a planetary government approach.
Yeah, and that's about it. I mean, that's what it's going to take. Good point, Tim. Thank you. Chris in Phoenix, Arizona. Hey, Chris.
Hey, Tom. I wanted to comment. I just caught the end of your last speaker concerning registering veterans to vote.
Yeah, Larry Scott.
Yeah, well, I'm a federal employee. I'm also a union member.
Mm-hmm.
And for years, American Federation of Government Employees would register veterans to vote, as well as, you know, employees of the government.
Right.
But that stopped approximately a year ago. We were told we're no longer allowed to do it, saying it violates the Hatch Act.
Right.
Claiming that unions are predominantly a democratic organization and therefore biased.
Right, which is nonsense. Unions are democratic institutions, small d, not large d. The members of a union elect their leaders and dictate their policy. And if they don't like the way it's going, they throw the bums out and get somebody else, as has happened many times in unions over the years.
Wanted to pass that information along that was being done.
Yeah. Well, this is how the Republicans... Yeah, they see, the Republicans, at a certain level, Chris, thank you very much, at a certain level, the Republicans are right that unions and union membership tend to find themselves philosophically aligned with the Democratic Party, but that's only because the Democratic Party is the party of the people, and the Republican Party is the party of the fat cats. I mean, it's just really, it kind of boils down to reality. Jennifer in Berkeley. Hey, Jennifer.
Hello.
Hey, you're on the air.
Hi. It also has to do with the world government. I wanted to say, you know, that's something that I used to believe in long ago, and the reason I don't anymore is for the same reason that you very poignantly brought up. Unfortunately, people always have the background assumption in their mind that world government is going to be run on their first choice of the way government is supposed to be. And the other thing that I primarily wanted to say, because you nailed them on most of the things that were wrong with this argument that I heard, was that this assumption that the Internet is always democratic is always a thing that I have to bring up and stop people on. Mm-hmm. It's not democratic to me. This is a problem. You know, the only difference I have with my OVC friends, with open source voting people, I'm involved in the voting rights movement and I'm a hand counted paper ballot person myself, is that is a system that's transparent only if you're a computer programmer.
Right.
And when this guy says, well, if all these transactions are transparent on the Internet, I say, whoa, that's not transparent to me.
Even if you're a programmer. And even if you're a programmer, it may not be transparent because it's possible to have hardware that changes things on the way. You know, have routers and switches and things that are messing with packets.
All these transactions would be transparent through a computer. Well, the computer itself is not transparent. That's where you've got a switcheroo that could be happening even when it has to do with the public policy, what you see, what you hear. When he says, well, right now these local governments don't have everybody's conversations being tapped. I'm like, yes, they do. The Bush administration has that.
There you go.
All those conversations, and we don't.
Yeah, you're right.
And the other thing that I was going to say, and you made the point, but I have to say I saw this film last night called The Judge in General, and it's playing again in San Francisco tomorrow at the Roxy. And of course, all this, it's about the junta in Chile, the coup, and of course, all that stuff sounds so familiar to us now. Why was it okay to round these people up? Because they were terrorists, and, you know, the torture and all this stuff is so relevant to now. And I said to one of the producers afterwards, well, geez, when did the tide start to turn? They're prosecuting people now. We can't get the impeachment movement off the table.
Right.
And he said, well, I think it was international pressure when that guy was almost arrested, when Pinochet was almost arrested in London.
But it took 25 years.
It took 25 years, and it took an international community. It took him going outside of Chile, even after more than half the population knew how horrible it was. They couldn't move on it until they had backing and support from, and even this judge, the star of this movie, basically, had support from the international community that changed his mind and changed his ability to move forward on this. And I thought, geez, we need the international community. There can't be only one community on the planet.
Yeah, and that's how I think it's going to play out here and worldwide. And as I said, I believe that the Bush administration and their buddies, their cronies who lied us into this war, and perhaps even Tony Blair and his buddies who lied us into the war, were complicit in lying us into the war, will be brought up on war crimes charges. It may take 10 or 15 or 20 years.
Yes, and
I believe it's going to happen.
Take until the, you know, he's so sick and dying. I hope we get him before that.
Yeah. And in fact, if there was some way to freeze his assets immediately, I mean, you know, but Jennifer, thank you very much for the call and for you know, just great. Great comments. Gail in San Francisco. Hey, Gail.
Hi. I wanted to say she stole my thunder because I said we are already being taped to death. But I wanted to go back to the Catholic person.
Mm-hmm.
And
Terry Jeffrey.
Yes. Uh-huh. And I have so much trouble.
He was
with
not. By the way, Terry was not representing himself. As a spokesperson for Catholics, his, you know, CNS News is a relatively conservative, tilting
okay.
news site. It's basically a news site, a website.
But I just wanted to compare today with when James Watt was appointed Secretary of the Interior and came out with his ridiculous statement that we didn't have to do anything to save or to do any ecology because Jesus was coming back and everything would be saved.
Right.
And the outcry among the American people was so great that he had to leave the office.
Right.
And now Bush appoints Gail Norton when he comes in, who was his acolyte. And nobody, you know, I mean, I'm not saying nobody, but nothing gets done. She stays, and then she leaves on her own accord, and everything's gone bad to worse.
Well, and it's not just Gail Norton. I mean, you look at some of the people, and by the way, what's-his-name's phrase was, all things shall be made new, James Watt's phrase. But, I mean, look at some of the people that Bush has put in charge of reproductive health. In our government. I mean, you know, it's truly startling. In fact, we're going to be talking about some of this tomorrow with a group that has come out and started attacking Planned Parenthood of the Willamette Valley, of the where I live here, and on a national level.
Can I add one more thing to
very quickly?
The General is a great movie to see, but Nancy Pelosi is going to be in San Francisco tomorrow night at Fort Mason, and people need to come out and protest this woman.
Yeah, and speak to her. I mean,
yes,
you know, speak to her in a reasonable fashion, but let her know that we're here and that we're not happy with the way things are going. Gail, thank you very much for the call. 45 minutes past the hour. By the way, Georgian President Mikhail Saakashvili today has called for John McCain to do more for Georgia. I'll tell you about that after the break, and we'll be hearing from Ellen Ratner about what's going on around the world.
Watch live video of the Tom Hartman Program at HartmanRadio.com.
Americans get burned, they won't just sit and complain. They know their rights, stand up and fight for jobs that are fair and humane. When those Walmart guys hear the word unionize, they go completely insane. They'll find out who, and boy, if it's you, you're in for a world of pain. Yeah, I got friends with low wages. They work for Walmart in outrageously bad conditions.
Speaking from behind the good old working class stainless steel microphone here in the People's Republic of Little Beirut, Tom Hartman with you. And downright strange stuff going on. This is actual news. This is real news. A giant inflatable dog turd by American artist Paul McCarthy blew away from an exhibition in the garden of a Swiss museum, bringing down the power lines and breaking a greenhouse window before it landed again, the museum said Monday. The artwork, called Complex Expletive Deleted, is the size of a house The wind carried it 200 meters from the Paul Klee Center in Bern before it fell back to the earth in the grounds of a children's home, said museum director Yuri Steiner. The inflatable broke the window at the children's home when it blew away. On it goes. Anyway, strange news. Let's get some real news here. Victoria Jones with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com on the Internet. Great website. Victoria, welcome to the show.
Thanks very much, Tom.
Isn't that a great setup for a serious journalist? I'm sorry to do that to you.
It's a perfect setup for me.
For that, you went to journalism school and got accredited as a White House reporter.
Sometimes that's about our level, frankly.
Let's say sometimes that's the level of the press secretaries that you have to deal with. I would never put you in that category. But, Victoria, so what's going on in the world?
Well, the president made a statement in the Rose Garden earlier today, and then, of course, the press secretary followed it up with a briefing. In the president's briefing, he expressed his strong support for President Saakashvili of Georgia and of President Sarkozy, and strongly supported the EU's efforts to bring about peace between Georgia and Russia, and said how the United States stands with Georgia. And talked about the reports, and he kept referring to them as reports of movements by Russia and breaking of the ceasefire, and talked about how very concerned he was about the reports, and then talked about the steps that the United States is taking. Right. And he talked about how Secretary of State Rice will be going to France and then on to Tbilisi and to express our unswerving support for Georgia, and how Defense Secretary Gates is already putting into motion a humanitarian support by our military headed by U.S. aircraft and the Navy, and calling on the Russians to allow this support to get in.
Oh, man. I sure hope this is not an Archduke Ferdinand moment. I am very concerned, frankly, that John McCain's senior foreign policy advisor, Randy Shuneman, the guy who made $900,000 in the last couple of years, directly, you know, checks written from President Saakashvili, you know, directly from Georgia as the main lobbyist for Georgia. The CNN today here, Georgian President Mikhail Saakashvili on Wednesday today called for John McCain and other American leaders to do more for Georgia in their response to the conflict in his country. This is quoting the president of Georgia. He says, "Yesterday I heard Senator McCain say we are all Georgians now. Well, very nice, you know, and cheering for us to hear that. But, okay, it's time to pass from this, from words to deeds." And, you know, this is bizarre. I mean, John McCain is using this conflict, and it's entirely possible that John McCain's senior policy advisor either intentionally or unintentionally initiated this conflict, and he's trying to use it as a campaign thing, you know, to pump himself up as some kind of, you know, "I, Claudius, we're strong, we're American," and we're risking world war.
Well, it certainly seems that this has been helpful to John McCain, and it also seems as though Barack Obama has not responded with the kind of vigor that some in the United States would like to have seen from him.
Yeah. I was just handed a story here that this is really weird, because about an hour ago in the chat room, I can send the link to you. Over at one of the websites, there's a picture of a Democratic donkey and in a crosshairs, and underneath it, it says, "Got ammo?" And this is apparently a T-shirt that Republicans can buy. And Sean just gave me this story from Fox News. The chairman of the Arkansas Democratic Party was hospitalized in critical condition after being shot inside party headquarters in Little Rock.
Wow.
The man who shot him escaped the area in a blue truck.
And we apparently know nothing about the man who shot him. We know nothing about the motivation for this shooting at all.
Yeah, amazing. Well, we've got a minute left here. Other things in the news?
Frankly, I was at the press briefing earlier today. There was only one topic of conversation, and it was this. Now, the question that I asked was, is it the White House's view that Prime Minister Putin is in charge in Russia?
Mm-hmm.
And, of course,
that's a very good question.
I didn't get an answer to that.
Well,
you won't be surprised to hear that I got no answer to that.
Yeah, but that is an excellent question. Medvedev is, you know, I think that there's probably a broad international consensus that he's more the front man. Here's another question. Is George Bush really in charge, or is it Dick Cheney?
That's a question I think many people have been asking for several years. And yeah. I think it'll only become apparent after the administration's out.
Yeah, I think so. But it seems that so many of these things, I mean, this seems to be Ron Suskind's book, you know, pointing back that a lot of this might be going back to the vice president's office, not the president's office. So,
yes.
Anyhow, we'll
yes,
see.
It does.
And was it the vice president or was it John McCain who told Shaakashvili that he should try to take back South Ossetia? I mean, who knows? Victoria Jones, TalkRadioNews.com. Thank you, Victoria.
Thank you.
Tomorrow I'll be talking with Christian Hawkins, Executive Director of Students for Life, about why she says Planned Parenthood's teen oral sex ad is over the top. Plus, Christy Harvey from the Center for American Progress is going to be here with News Under the Radar and the best of the rest of the news. Your calls here on the Tom Hartman Program. And don't forget, my friends, activism begins with you. Democracy begins with you. Get out there. Get active. Tag. You're it. See you tomorrow.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. For exclusive audio archives and more information, visit HartmanRadio.com.